Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 13, Dhritarashtra with Home. Text 21.
Pitri,
Pratri,
Savit,
Putra,
Hata,
Te,
Vigatam,
Vayam,
Atma,
Cha,
Jaya,
Jastaha,
Para,
Deha,
Upasate,
Pitra Pratra Suhrit Putra Ataste Vigatam Vaya
Atma
Cha Jaya Grasta
Atma Cha Jaya Grasta
Parayeham Vipatase
Parayeham Vipatase
Pitra Pratra Suhrit Putra
Pitra Pratra Suhrit Putra
Ataste Vigatam Vaya
Ataste Vigatam Vaya
Atma Cha Jaya Grasta
Atma Cha Jaya Grasta
Parageham Vipassate
Parageham Vipassate
Chitra Pratri Suhit Putra
Chitra Pratri Suhit Putra
Ataste Vigatam Vaya
Ataste Vigatam Vaya
Atma Cha Jaya Grasta
Atma Cha Jaya
Parayeham Vipassate
Parayeham Vipassate
Chitra Pratra Suhrit Putra
Ataste Vigatam Vaya
Ataste
Vigatam Vaya
Extended. स्वयं
आत्मा
सुपाली
Also,
Chalaya, by his validity, Trastaha, overcome, Parageha, another's home, Upasate, you to live. Translation by Srila Prabhupada, please repeat, your father, brother, well-wisher, and son are all dead and passed away. You yourself have expended the major portion of your life. Your body is now overtaken by invalidity, and you are living in the home of another. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The king is reminded of his precarious condition, influenced by cruel time, and by his past experience, he should have been more intelligent to see what was going to happen to his own life. His father, the Chitravirya, died long ago, when he and his younger brothers were all little children, and it was due to the care and kindness of Bhishma Dev that they were properly brought up. Then again, his brother Pandu died also. Then, in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, his 100 sons and his grandsons all died, along with all other well-wishers, like Bhishmadev, Dronacharya, Karna, and many other kings and friends. So, he had lost all men and money, and now he was living at the mercy of his nephew, whom he had put into troubles of various types. And despite all these reverses, he thought he would prolong his life more and more. Madhura wanted to point out to Dhritarashtra that everyone has to protect himself by his action and the grace of the Lord. One has to execute his duty faithfully, depending for the result on the supreme authority. No friend, no children, no father, no brother, no state, and no one else can protect a person who is not protected by the Supreme Lord. One should, therefore, seek the protection of the Supreme Lord, for the human form of life is meant for seeking that protection. He was warned of his precarious conditions more and more by the following words. So, in the next verses, the speech of Madhura will continue. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnanjana Sharakaya Chakshurakirthamvina Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasavi Gaura Bhaktavinoda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. I will say something about this verse and purport. I've also been asked to speak a little bit about my science coaching and about some of my books, like my latest book, Human Evolution, a Vedic Alternative to Darwin's Theory. Srila Prabhupada has called Dhritarashtra
a symbol of the typical materialist. He wants to control everything for his own sense gratification. And he wanted to control everything for the sense gratification of his sons and family members, like Duryodhana. So to do that, he was prepared to ignore the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he wanted his sons to rule the world. He therefore supported Duryodhana in his plans to deny any kingdom to the Pandavas headed by Yudhisthira. So therefore, Krishna arranged for the battle of Kurukshetra. And in the battle of Kurukshetra, Dhritarashtra's sons were all defeated and killed. So this shows that if someone goes against the will of Krishna, they can never win. They will always be defeated in the end. But now, even though he is in this position, he still hasn't understood what his own fate will be. So Vidura, who had always tried to give him good counsel, continues to give him good counsel. You should see that everyone that you relied on has passed away. And now you should understand that you yourself are an old man, and similarly, very soon you should pass away. So you should stop, making plans to have some comfortable material situation in this world. You should prepare for leaving your body. So in this sense, Dhritarashtra is a typical materialist. He doesn't understand that this material life is temporary, and that no amount of material sense gratification, no amount of material power can really satisfy the soul. For that, one has to surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, perform devotional service for the satisfaction of Lord Krishna. Then one can become satisfied in this life, and one can achieve the highest goal after this life by going back home, back to Godhead. So, in the modern age, many, many people are acting like Dhritarashtra. They are forgetting the real purpose of human existence. They ignore the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And they think somehow or other in that way, they can become happy or satisfied. Many of them become attached to various materialistic and atheistic philosophies. And in this way, they prepare themselves for a very bad future, both in this world and the next. In the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, Asatyam Pratishta Te, Jagat Ahur Amishvara, Aparas Purasatu Tam, Kinadya Tamahaitam. Here, you know, Krishna describes a certain type of philosopher who believes there is no God in control of the universe. Such philosophers think matter is the only thing that exists, and matter is just combining in its own way. So, there is no real purpose to life in this universe. We can simply do whatever we like in order to maximize our own power, our own influence, our own enjoyment. There's no need to satisfy any higher authority. We are the only authorities who exist. And those who are strong, they will prevail. This is the idea. Now, from this philosophy comes a certain way of life. Everything starts from the subtle and then goes to the gross. So, in further on in the 16th chapter, Lord Krishna describes Jagatode Subhadra Ki Jai. Further in the 16th chapter, Lord Krishna describes the kind of light that comes from these ideas. Krishna says, influenced by these ideas, people will think that to gratify the senses until death is the main purpose of human life. And even if they believe in God, they'll simply pray, help me gratify my senses until death. Krishna goes on to explain that the lives of such persons will be full of anxiety because they will have millions of material desires that they can never fulfill. And Krishna goes on to say, such people will create horrible things meant to destroy the world. So, 5,000 years ago, Lord Krishna spoke these things. And 5,000 years later, today, we can see it all coming true. Today, the dominant philosophy in the world is the philosophy of the modern materialistic scientists. And they tell us there is no God in control of the universe. There's only matter. Matter is operating in its own way according to physical laws and producing everything without any guidance, without any control. There is no soul. Consciousness is just chemicals in the brain. You want to know where you came from? Well, you came from monkeys. Early in the Earth's history, there were just chemicals. The chemicals combined together. They formed some first single-celled organism. And then some of those single-celled organisms started joining together. And some of them became fish. And some of the fish grew legs. And they crawled up on the land and became frogs. And some of the frogs became lizards. And some of the lizards became rats. And some of the rats climbed into the trees and became monkeys. And some of the monkeys climbed down out of the trees and became scientists. Now, we're not against all science. Many of you may be scientists. And Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada says, science used in the service of the Lord is Hari Kirtan. So that science we accept. The science is used to establish the glories of Lord Krishna. The science is used to establish the Vedic philosophy. Then it's good. It's leading people in the right direction. But if science is used to describe this philosophy that Lord Krishna describes in the 16th chapter of the Gita, the divine and demoniac nature, then such science is misleading people. So, therefore, Srila Prabhupada wanted his scientifically trained disciples to use science for the glorification of the Lord, to establish that God exists, to establish that the soul exists, to establish the truth of the Bhagavatam philosophy and its descriptions of the origin of life, the origin of the universe, and things like this. That is why Srila Prabhupada formed the Bhaktivedanta Institute during his presence in 1974 and 1975. And he was very happy that he had a scientifically trained disciple, Bhakti Sri Dhamadhar Maharaj, with his PhD in biochemistry, which he obtained from the University of California, Irvine. So Srila Prabhupada was very happy to have a disciple like that, who took his instructions very seriously. And he wrote a book, which Srila Prabhupada was still present, showing how life cannot come from chemicals. And Srila Prabhupada was very proud of that book. He would often mention in his discussions with scientists, yes, and my scientist disciple, Dr. Singh, Tumant Damodar Singh, Bhakti Swarup Damodar Maharaj, he has written one book showing that life cannot come from chemicals. And then another thing Bhakti Swarup Damodar Maharaj did during Prabhupada's presence was, there was some big scientist coming to his university who was promoting this idea of life can come from chemicals. So he directly challenged him, if I give you the chemicals, can you produce life? And he had to admit, no. So, Srila Prabhupada would often mention this in his discussions with scientists. Yes, they say life came from chemicals, but my disciple, my scientist disciple, Tumant Damodar Singh, Swarup Damodar, he is directly challenged. One of these scientists who came to his university, and he said, if I give you the chemicals, can you make life? And he had to admit, no. But we're working on it. So, Srila Prabhupada wanted his scientifically trained disciples to expose the false theories of modern materialistic scientists, and he also wanted them to establish the real truth, the Vedic conclusions, put them on a scientific basis. As Bhakti Sri Dhamadhar wrote another book, The Scientific Basis of Krishna Consciousness. So, the members of the Bhaktivedanta Institute, as Srila Prabhupada's other scientifically trained disciples, have tried to fulfill his orders and instructions in this regard. And since 1984, I then engaged in this work myself. One of the founding members of the Bhaktivedanta Institute, Sadhu Puja Prabhu, asked me to work on the question of human evolution, because Sri Prabhupada was very interested in that idea. And he said, we did not come from apes or monkeys. He said, maybe Darwin will become a monkey in his next life. But he did not like this idea that human beings came from apes. He said, in Srimad Bhagavatam, we learned that the first living thing was Brahma, and he was human. And in Srimad Bhagavatam, we learn that humans have been present since the very beginning of life on Earth. So it's not that human beings came from monkeys. They came from Prajapatis, the great sages. And for example, in India here, you have the concept of Goksha. That means, if you trace your father's back, your grandfather's, great-grandmother's, and if you trace your ancestors back in time, you will come to some Prajapati or great sage, Atri, Brihu, something. Now, according to the materialistic scientists, that's not true. If you trace your ancestors back a little bit, you'll come to some ape men. And then you trace a little further back, you come to some monkeys, like that. And further back, the chemicals. So, there are many scientists in India who accept the Darwinian theory of evolution. And many of them, they're also Brahmins. They're wearing that thread. So, when they go to the temple, and the priest asks them, what is your gotra? If they're going to be honest, they should not say, Atri, Brihu, or Brihu. They should say, monkey. Well, we have some special puja for you. So I took up the assignment of trying to show the truth of what the Bhagavatam says about human origins, and show that what the supporters of the Darwinian theory of evolution are saying is not true. So, of course, for me, the statements of Srimad Bhagavatam, the statements of the Vedic literature, they are the highest proof. They don't require any support from material evidence and logic. And we should understand something about the Vedic epistemology. And according to the Vedic epistemology, there are two ways to get knowledge. One is called the ascending path of knowledge. It's based on two kinds of evidence: pratyaksha, sense evidence, and anumana, logic. But the conclusions arrived at by that method are not very perfect, because all the senses are limited and imperfect. It's called karna patala. And then the mind that we use to evaluate the evidence that comes from our senses, that is also imperfect, because the mind can make mistakes. The mind can become illusioned. The mind can cheat or become the victim of cheating. So, this path of knowledge is not very perfect. But this is the path of knowledge followed by modern materialistic science. Scientists look at the world with their senses or with their scientific instruments, which are extensions of their senses. They collect this data, they make some experiments, they make some hypotheses, and with the mind, they try to evaluate it, come to some conclusion. But that path is not perfect. So therefore, there's another path of knowledge in the Vedic system. It's called the descending path of knowledge. It's also based on evidence, but shabda brahma, transcendental sound. So this means there's some supreme conscious being who has perfect knowledge, and he can give it to human beings in the form of transcendental sound, which is then recorded in books like Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, many others. And here we get perfect knowledge. Now, this perfect knowledge does not require to be proved by any other form of knowledge. It's not necessary to prove shabda by pratyaksha anumana, because that would mean pratyaksha sense evidence and anumana, material logic, are superior to shabda, transcendental sound. That's not true. As a matter of fact, we do it the other way. We prove pratyaksha anumana with shabda. If some sense evidence conforms to shabda, then we say, yes, that's good evidence. If there's some logic that leads to the conclusion that we read in the Vedic literature, then we say, yes, that's good logic. If there's evidence that contradicts what we know from shabda, then that's not good evidence. If there's some logic that leads to a conclusion that opposes the Vedic conclusion, then we understand that's bad logic. So we don't use material evidence and logic to prove the Vedas. We use the Vedas to prove what is good logic, what is good evidence. But the problem is this. Not everyone today, including many people in India, accept the Vedas as authority. So, Srila Prabhupada said, sometimes we have to use pratyaksha and anumana, sense evidence and logic, in the service of the Vedic conclusions. So, in our scientific work, we often have to do this. We can't just go to a scientific conference and say, it says that Srimad Bhagavatam, human beings existed at the beginning of life on earth, accepted or died. Because they don't. Now, if I went to some gathering of Vaishnavas or something, I could say, yes, it's Srimad Bhagavatam says, and they have to accept it as evidence. But scientists don't accept this as evidence, they don't accept it as proof. They want to see some stones and bones and So I did 8 years of research into the whole history of archaeology, and I found that many scientists, many archaeologists actually have found evidence that humans existed millions and millions and millions of years ago, just like the Srimad Bhagavatam says. So this evidence isn't very well known because it contradicts the theory of evolution. But it's there. The evidence is actually there in the scientific literature. So I collected all that together and on this principle that evidence that supports the Bhagavatam conclusions, we can accept that. And we can use it to help draw people's interest to the Srimad Bhagavatam as a source of valid knowledge about scientific questions. So, I put all that information in that book, and people began to read it, scientists and others. And then they began to ask me a question. Well, if you have all of this evidence that contradicts the Darwinian theory of evolution and supports what the Bhagavatam says, then if you don't think human beings came from monkeys, then where do you think human beings came from? So to answer that question, I wrote another book called Human Devolution, A Vedic Alternative to Darwin's Theory. And really that book is a Bhagavad Gita class for scientists. What it is, it's a commentary on the Bhagavad Gita verse. Bhagavad Gita, Jiva Loke, Jiva Rupa, Sanatana, Manasasthana, Jiyami, Parvadishthana, Karchati. So, in that verse, Krishna explains where we came from. He says, you're a Jiva soul. You're originally part of me. You originally existed on a spiritual level of reality, which is called Sanatana, eternal. But now, you come down to the level of matter. Prakriti Shani Karshati. You come down from the Sanatana world to the level of Prakriti. And here you have to struggle. Manasasthani Jnani, Prakriti Shani Karshati. You have become covered by the subtle material mind element and a gross physical body made of senses, material senses. And now you have to struggle against birth, death, old age, disease. So your purpose in life should be to return to that original spiritual position. So this is really what the book Human Evolution is all about. Because many scientists, they don't believe that there's any eternal conscious self, an Atma, that is Sanatana, that's part of God. They believe matter is the only thing that really exists. And when matter becomes organized in a very complex state in the brain, then we get what we call consciousness and mind. But only temporarily, according to them, because as soon as you disorganize the matter, then there's no more consciousness, no more mind, nothing like that. So they don't believe that there's an eternal self that is part and parcel of God, that eternally exists consciously on the Sanatana or spiritual level of reality. No, they think matter is the only thing that exists. Temporarily it can produce consciousness, but when it's disorganized, it goes away. And one of them, they believe this idea of God, this is just one foolish idea that comes when consciousness temporarily exists. So, what I try to do in this book, Human Evolution, there's some copies of it out there, is establish there is a conscious self that can exist apart from matter. It originally exists on a spiritual level of reality, but it can come to the level of matter and it can become covered and limited, you know, by matter. Oh, yes. Yeah, this is this book. And I explained all the steps I do together. It's for this. Now, as I said, for me, for us devotees, we don't need any scientific evidence in order to accept these things, because we accept the statements of Lord Krishna and Bhagavad Gita as the highest evidence. But for those who don't accept the statements of the Gita, but who are open-minded and willing to consider, there may be other ways of understanding things. For them, out of mercy to them, we'll give them some scientific evidence. We'll give them some logic. Out of mercy. Or you won't take Bhagavad Gita. Now, you just give them the Bhagavad Gita, many of them, they'll accept. But then others say, oh, this is just some ancient mythology, there's no science to this, this. But we can show, yes, you like scientific evidence, you like logic. Well, here's some scientific evidence that supports the Vedic conclusion. Here's some logic that supports the Vedic conclusion. Now, we ourselves, we don't need that. we just accept Bhagavad Gita, Shabbat, Bhagavad. That's the highest truth. But for those who don't accept such things, such as students at universities, professors, scientists, Srila Prabhupada wanted us to use scientific evidence and logic in the service of the Vedic conclusions. So that's what I'm trying to do in this book. And Srila Prabhupada didn't just want his scientifically trained disciples to write books. He wanted them to go out into the world and represent these ideas to the general public, and also to the intellectuals, the academics, the scholars, the philosophers, the scientists, the theologians. He wanted this. So, in my own way, I tried to follow that instruction. So, after I wrote these books, I began to go to scientific conferences to present these conclusions. And at first, I felt like I was jumping out of an airplane with no parachute. But sometimes you have to do that in order to give Krishna a chance to help you. You know, you have to take some risks for Krishna. Then Krishna can help you. If you don't take it, if you don't try to do anything, then of course Krishna can't help you. But if you try to do something for Krishna, and Krishna likes to see his devotees do impossible things. Because if you try to do something that's within your abilities, I think that's not very interesting for Krishna. Oh, okay, he can do that. Let him go. Do this thing. But see, he's trying to do something impossible for me. Maybe I should help him. You know, that's how I think Krishna operates. So I found that, of course, there's opposition to these ideas. Just like when Arjuna stepped onto the battlefield of Kurukshetra, now that everyone said, "Hare Bol, we surrender to you." Now there was some opposition he had to overcome in order to get the goal. So, in this scientific preaching, there's also some opposition to be overcome. But when Arjuna went on the battlefield, he also found there were some people on his side, including Krishna, which is helpful. So when we engage in this kind of service, we see, yes, some opposition is there, and yes, some support is also there. But we also see Krishna helping in different ways. So I've been preaching in many different countries. These books have been translated into many different languages. So when they're translated into different languages, I get invited to speak at scientific conferences on archaeology and anthropology and scientific institutions, universities, and things like that. So 2 years ago, I was invited to Russia to speak. These books, Forbidden Archaeology and Human Devolution, have been published in the Russian language, so I was invited to speak there. And I spoke in 12 different cities. I traveled over the whole country. And in most cases, the lectures were very good. Many students and scientists came. They were interested to hear a Vedic perspective, and many of them purchased books. But in some cases, there was some opposition. There was one city where scientists at the university invited me to speak, and a lecture was scheduled. And then at the last moment, 1 or 2 days before the lecture, the president of the university canceled the lecture. because of pressure from some outside organizations. They did think the Hare Krishna anti-Darwinists should be allowed to speak at their university. So, the president of the university canceled the lecture. So then, the professors who invited me, they tried to speak to him. Said, why are you doing this? This is not good. He's presenting scientific evidence. Let's hear him. Let's hear what he has to say. The president of the university said, no. My decision stands. He will not speak here. So then, the professors went to the local branch of the Russian Academy of Sciences, which is actually higher than the university, you know, in the hierarchy, scientific hierarchy in Russia. So they explained the situation to the director of the local branch of the Russian Academy of Sciences. And he considered, and then he said, he will speak here, and no one will put any pressure on me. He'll speak here. So they shifted the lecture from the university to the branch of the Russian Academy of Sciences. And they arranged for buses to take hundreds of students and professors from the university to the Russian Academy of Sciences building. So the professors told me that more people came than would have come if the lecture had been held at the university. Because he said, everybody in the whole university was talking about it. Why did the president cancel his lecture? What is he going to say that's so dangerous? You know, So what is he going to say that's so dangerous? So they all came, and they all wanted to hear. And it was a very good lecture, and lots of good questions. Many people purchased books. And then afterwards, I had a private meeting with the director of the local branch of the Russian Academy of Sciences and some leading scientists from the city. It was very good. So I could see that was Krishna helping. Krishna's in the hearts of everyone, so he inspired this man. No, you can speak here. Nobody will pressure me. So it's interesting what happened. So that was 2 years ago. So then last year, October, November, December, I went back to Russia, and I went to the same city again. Again, I went to about 12 different cities, and I went back to the same city again, the same university. And some professors there have scheduled a lecture for me in the biology department of the same university. And this time, the president didn't oppose. I think he learned his lesson that if he tried to oppose it, it would just be worse for him than if he let me speak there. So I did. Of course, this doesn't happen all the time. Most of my lectures, they go on as scheduled. Many people come and take religious books. Now, sometimes, of course, there's some challenging questions that we have to answer. But now, when this book was first published here in India, in a special Indian edition, because the Western version, it costs $30 or something, which is, it's too expensive for India. So we brought out a special edition here, which I think goes for 300 rupees. But when it was first published here a couple of years ago, I went on a lecture tour starting in Kolkata, and there was a meeting held at the Kolkata Chamber of Commerce with all the, with many leading citizens, industrialists, scientists, newspaper people from Calcutta attending, and I was introduced by Ambarish Prabhu Alfred Ford. And it was a very good event, a very nice event, a very good way to start the tour. Then I spoke at the University of Calcutta, and then I went to Mumbai, spoke at IIT Mumbai and other schools there. Then I went to Bangalore, and the first time I was here, I also spoke at Indian Institute of Science. Then I went to Coimbatore, Trivandrum, Chennai, spoke at IIT Chennai, then went to Hyderabad, spoke at some scientific institutions there. And everywhere there were big newspaper articles, and all the major papers, Statesman, Times of India, the Hindu, Deccan Herald, it was just very amazing. They were all saying, evolution versus devolution, American scientist challenges Darwin. So there was quite a good response. And I'm happy to be back here again. The reason I'm here now is that in December, I attended a conference organized by Bhaktivedanta Institute in Trichy, called Science and the Spiritual Quest. Very nicely organized event. Hundreds of science teachers and students from educational institutions all over India came, and I spoke about this book there. And many of the professors asked if I could come and speak at their institutions. So I said, well, you arrange a schedule, and I'll come. So they did, and the Bhaktivedanta Institute assisted with this, for which I'm very grateful. And I came at the beginning of March. The tour started in Pune, went to Belgaum, now I'm here in Bangalore. I spoke at the Indian Institute of Science last night. It was a very nice event. Many professors, students were there. They got some prasadam, some nice samosas with chutney, and also some of my chutney. Some of my hot chutney. In the form of the talk against the Darwinian theory of evolution. And it's a very good event. And then from here, I'm going tomorrow to the Delhi area. I'll be speaking at BITS Pilani in Rajasthan, NIT, Gurukshetra, students in the Delhi area, Chandigarh area. Then after that, I'll be speaking at Banaras Hindu University in Varanasi, and then going on to the Calcutta area to speak at IIT Kharagpur and several other institutions in the Calcutta area. And then April 17th, I'll be going back to Los Angeles. So, of course, it's very exciting for me, to present this Vedic alternative to Darwin's theory in India, which is the home of the Vedic culture. So I like that very much. But I also like representing these ideas all over the world to different scientific audiences and the general public. So those are some words about Dhritarashtra and this verse, and then a few words about my preaching. So does anybody have any questions or comments? Maybe you can go to 1:30 or something like that with questions. Yes, for who? So the question is, Dhritarashtra doesn't seem to be a great devotee, so how can he be discussed in Srimad Bhagavatam? Srimad Bhagavatam is a description of Krishna's pastimes of this world, and we see that Krishna interacts with all kinds of personalities. Now, for example, Srimad Bhagavatam describes the pastimes of Ram. So how can you describe the pastimes of Ram without describing Ram? You know, so Ram is made mention. When Krishna appears, Narottama, he's also mentioned. So Dhritarashtra is also mentioned. And the reason is that Srimad Bhagavatam is presenting to us the positive examples, so we know what to do and what the result of acting in a positive way towards Krishna is. And then Srimad Bhagavatam also gives us the negative example too, what not to do. Don't be a Ravana, don't be a Kamsa, don't be a Dhritarashtra. Of course, Dhritarashtra is not completely bad. Of course, this is another problem, that it's usually hard to find someone who's completely bad. Maybe they have some good impulse, but they're sometimes overcome by their materialistic desires. So Dhritarashtra is an example of that. But he's very fortunate to have Vidura as his royal wisher, because he's going to renounce, he's actually going to follow Vidura's advice and renounce the palace, go to the forest with his wife, and practice the Ashtanga Yoga system in order to liberate himself from his bad conditioning. So, we'll see as we go on in this chapter how that happens. So in Srimad Bhagavatam, we're getting many examples. Positive examples, negative examples, and we can get an example showing how you can go from one state to the other, from a bad state to a better state, in terms of your behavior. So Srimad Bhagavatam is giving us many examples like that, and because they're in connection with Krishna, they're transcendental. Anything in connection with Krishna is transcendental. And Srila Prabhupada would often point this out. He said, yes, some people, they're not very interested in Krishna's activities on the battlefield with Kurukshetra and creating the universe. They only want to hear about gopis, Krishna gopis. He said, no, it's all transcendental. Krishna is arranging the battle of Kurukshetra, the war between the Pandavas and the Kurus. All these things are transcendental because they're in connection with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So another question. Yes?
So, the text command and Anuman command can be used to support the refutation of the command.
Yes.
So, it's while using the conclusion of protection and Anuman, while using protection of Anuman to support the refutation of Shastra Brahman, how will we recognize whether we are doing the right track? Sometimes we may get deviated and we may go back to the wrong track.
Well, that's what I said. We have to use Shabda in order to judge whether Pratyaksha and Anumana are being used in the right way. So, for example, if I work in forbidden archaeology, I started with the Vedic conclusion. It's there throughout the Vedic literature, in the Puranas, the Upanishads, everywhere, that humans have been there since the beginning. So, if I could find evidence that supports that idea, I say, oh, this is good evidence, I can use it. However, we have to understand something, that all material evidence is imperfect. Just like all material things are imperfect. Say I may use a computer in Krishna's service. For example, I brought to India a Sony Vaio laptop that I was using in Krishna's service. But a week ago, it crashed. So, because it's a material thing, it's not going to last. It's not eternal, blissful, and full of knowledge. it's going to break down. It just chose to break down in the middle of my tour, so I was very upset. So this happened in Buddha. So what did I do? Did I give up my service? I tried to fix the computer. I couldn't fix it. So what I did is I went out to a computer shop in Pune, and I bought an LG Netbook. got all my programs and files on it, started work, so I'm continuing my service. So material evidence is like that. Now, the computer is a material thing, but we use it in Krishna's service. But the computer can break down because it's a material thing. It's not perfect after all. So what do? I continue the service by either fixing the computer or getting a new computer. So the same with material evidence that I may try to use in Krishna's service, in the service of Shabda. It may break down. And for example, if I look, I might mention some archaeological discovery, human skeleton that was found in layers of rock millions of years old. Now, that's some material evidence. I'm using it in Krishna's service, but it could break down. What do I mean break down? It means some scientist could come to me and convince me. Well, it really isn't true. There was some mistake in the dating or something that happened. So then what do I do? Well, I don't give up the Vedic conclusion that human beings existed millions of years ago, but as far as this particular case is concerned, I may try to fix it, which means respond to the objection in an effective way. The dating methods were wrong, but I can show you the dating methods weren't wrong. The dating methods were correctly applied in this case. But maybe I'm not able to fix it. So then what do? I get another case. Just like I get another computer, but I never give up the Vedic conclusion. Never. So we have to be careful. Material evidence isn't like Shastra. It's material. We can use it in Krishna's service. Just like we use cars in Krishna's service, we use computers in Krishna's service, we use sound systems in Krishna's service. They're all material things, they're all imperfect, but we'll use them in Krishna's service. If they break down, we'll fix them, we'll get another one, but we'll go on with Krishna's service. So that's another principle, something else. Oh, and then another thing you can tell, is if as a result of your involvement in the production of the body, you start developing doubts about the Vedic conclusions. We know these scientists, they have so much evidence they're talking about. You find yourself doubting the Vedic conclusions, then you should know you're not approaching things in the proper way. And then another way to understand you may be influenced in an improper way is if you start having problems with the principles of Sadhana Bhakti, then you can understand something is wrong in the way I'm approaching this. But if you're approaching things in a proper way, Krishna will give you intelligence, guidance, inspiration from within. You'll feel stronger in Krishna consciousness. Your faith in the Vedic conclusions will increase. Your power and ability to influence others to accept those conclusions will increase. But if you're going in the other direction, maybe you're getting all kinds of doubts, and fear, then they think, I should just chant Hare Krishna for a while and get back some of my spiritual notes.
The scientists are claiming that they are producing clones of Vedic and the texture of Vedic. What is the next?
Okay, so the question is, scientists claim to be cloning living things, test tube babies, things like this. But these things were understood thousands of years ago by the authors of these Vedic literatures. For example, we're talking about the 100 sons of Dhritarashtra. How were they produced? Well, there was one embryo that came from Janardhan, but Vyasadeva cloned, you know, produced 100 sons from that one embryo. So you can say he cloned 100 sons of Dhritarashtra. But how does that work? A soul has to enter each part of the embryo that was cloned in that way. So these things were written about in the Vedic literature. Now, a few years ago, there were some scientists, they had the first cloned animal, a sheep called Dolly, right? One sheep, Dolly. So the way they did this was, they took like a fertilized egg from a sheep, they removed the nucleus, you know, the genetic information. And normally, the genetic, you get half the genes from the father and half from the mother. Therefore, the child is not like the father, not an exact copy of the father, not an exact copy of the mother, because the genetic material is coming from two sources. So what they did is they took that mixed genetic material out. They took a gene from a sheep, just some other sheep, and put it in. So it's not half from the mother and half from the father. It's all from this one other sheep. So then they tried to put some electricity into that egg, get it to start growing. And then if it worked, it would turn into an exact copy of the sheep that gave the genetic material. Because all the genetic material was from that one sheep, not half from the mother and half from the father. And that's why the child is not a look exactly like the mother, exactly like the father, but mixed. But here, they were doing it a different way. All the genetic material from one sheep, put it in the egg, make an exact copy of that sheep. So they did it. But it took them 300 times to do it. They tried 300 times to get that process to work. So the way I look at it is like this. Krishna's super soul is watching. Okay, the scientists, the biologists, they get together, they do all this very intense work. They get their egg, they put the electric shock. It doesn't work. All right. Then Krishna watches them. Again, they try, you know, many weeks, getting everything, adjusting everything, injecting the genetic material, giving the electric shock. Doesn't work. Then a third time, you know, they do everything again. Give the electric, Krishna saying, these guys are really determined. I wish my devotees were as determined. Because yeah, sometimes you try to do something and it doesn't work. Oh, the Krishna doesn't want it at all. But these scientists, they are so determined. You have to admire them. You know, scientists aren't all bad. You have to admire them. You know, the determination. So they try four times, five times. So what's happening is Krishna's not giving a soul. Krishna's not putting a soul there, so it's not working. So I said, let me see how far these guys will go. times, you know, 20 times, 30 times, 40 times. These guys are really determined. So 100 times, you know, Krishna doesn't give a soul. 200 times, Krishna doesn't give a soul. And finally, 300 times, Krishna gives it. Okay, you want it so bad, here. Put the soul in that embryo. And then it grows to be the sheep, Dali. So that's the principle, yes. But see, you have to understand, they're manipulating things that are already alive. They're not producing life from nothing. There are already some living systems there. There's already living sheep, living eggs, So they're just manipulating it a little bit. Manipulating what Krishna's already given them. But still requires something from Krishna. But it's going to work. Krishna has to put a soul in that fertilized egg so that it will develop into an embryo. So I would say the 300th time Krishna said, all right, you want it so bad, I'll put the soul there and you can have your sheep, Dali. Okay, I think we should stop now, or what do you think? Organizers? Okay, one more question. Okay, let's let one of the ladies have a chance. Okay.
My name is Radhika Singh. I'm your birth sister. I actually live in Darwin in Australia. The place where I live is named after Charles Darwin.
Yes, I see that place on the map. I've been wondering when I'm going to get an invitation to lecture there.
You have an invitation.
Okay. Well, yes. But you have to actually arrange something for a specific time, specific place. Give me the invitation, I'll come. But it reminds me of something. When I was in Moscow, I was invited to lecture at the Darwin Museum in Moscow. So it was very interesting for me to do that, to lecture against Darwin's theory in Darwin's Museum. It sort of reminded me that, I mean, a long time ago, there were some devoted friends of mine. They were kind of joking around with me. They said, Drew, kind of a little, maybe you're a reincarnation of Charles Darwin. And you have to take further yet to correct your mistake. That's right. So I laughed too when I first heard it. But then, yeah, now that I have to undergo the austerity of traveling all around the world and giving these hundreds of lectures against that theory, you know, it's quite a world. Maybe it's true. But that would be a very interesting experience to see that's Darwin in Darwin, Australia. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.